It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be with you in studio today. Well, welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I am a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years now, helping them to clarify their objectives and reach their goals. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to the website, www.thecoachingperspective.com. Well, this is the second broadcast in a series that I'm calling The Post Game of Life. Coincidentally, although today's the last day of June, do you know that June is National Rebuild Your Life Month? I never heard that one, but they must have named it that because they knew I was doing this show. It seems appropriate, therefore, that today we're going to focus on retirement, or as many people are now calling it, unretirement. We'll explore what this means to those boomers that are now facing the traditional retirement age, and what it means to businesses that are about to lose the major portion of their upper managers and skilled workforce. For individuals, it opens up that question of what now? While for businesses, it means evaluating how are we going to deal with an aged work population. So let's get going. Like I said, this is a continuation of our last discussion. That show was titled Loss of Identity. If you look at it, it was our June 16th broadcast titled Who Am I? My Job? And we talked about the fact that loss of identity usually follows a major change in our life, either business or personal. And this change can leave a gap in how we identify ourselves, either based on our beliefs in the value or worth we generate, or how effective and in control of our lives we are. And we then talked about how to go about establishing a new identity. So those were on our previous broadcast. You might ask, why am I, a business coach, so concerned with this issue of identity? Two issues concern me. One is retirement. I'm going to talk about that today. And the other is the aging of senior executives and business owners. Similar but different issues. Both of these situations have a high likelihood of creating a loss of identity for the people involved that is as serious as that caused by the loss of a spouse. My experience is that the majority of executives have done very little preparation other than financial for these events. I believe that the issue of loss of identity is especially critical in successful executives that have devoted a major portion of their life to driving the business. Even more critical is that their personal self-worth has always been closely tied to the business success, and that generally their work-life balance has been tilted to work. Our focus today is going to be on the impact of retirement. A few statistics, not many. According to Pew Research, roughly 10,000 boomers are turning 65 every day, a pace that will continue until 2030. Somebody said, never before have so many people had so much experience and the time and the capacity to do something significant with it. For some, the last third of life is being reimagined and reinvented into what we're calling unretirement. These individuals are creating a workforce that is better educated, healthier, and that can earn an income well into and past the traditional retirement years. You know, if the popular image of retirement is the golf course and the RV, the new image of unretirement is the workplace and entrepreneurial startups. Today's older workers are asking, what is this aging thing? Where do I fit in? Have I found my passion? Is this the second half that I dreamed of? And if not, how do I change it? You know, we may think these are new questions, but they're not. In 1825, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow wrote a poem urging his fellow classmates at Bowdoin College, and here's the poem, to not lie down and fade. No, something remains for us to do or dare. For age is opportunity no less than youth itself, though in another dress. And as the evening twilight fades away, the sky is filled with stars invisible by day. Oh, you have to think about that. If you don't like thinking about that, you might like the words of Fleetwood Mac. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Don't stop, it'll soon be here. That's frankly more my style. You know, what's new, not the question, but what's new is the emotional, physical, and intellectual youthfulness of today's aged population. The challenge is twofold. That of changing our own personal assumptions of what age means, and that of society changing or updating its assumptions about older workers. Because who's old? Well, they say people who think they're old, that's who. You know, the word retire stems from a French word for withdrawing or heading into isolation. Who would want to retire with that definition? Statistics show us that, in fact, many people find they really didn't want to retire. They just wanted a long vacation. The numbers say that 26% of retirees reverse their decision and return to work either full or part-time. They found retirement less satisfying and more boring than they'd expected. The RAND Corporation learned that a surprising number of people needed to make a break with their current job before they could figure out what to do next. So that's a little background. What are some of the common beliefs about retirement and aging? Are they valid? And if so, is there anything we can do about it? Let's look at a few of those. Let's talk about the assumption or the myth that your brain power declines as you get older. Well, true or false? Yes and no. Yes, studies have shown that our cognitive power does decline as we age. However, much of that is offset by the fact that younger people often only use one side of their brain in solving problems, and older people compensate by using both hemispheres in problem solving. The ability to solve problems by looking at them from multiple perspectives is enhanced by this dual hemisphere solution. For older people, the knowledge and expertise they've developed often enhances both productivity and creativity. Brain power, not an issue. The other assumption, well, you stop learning and growing when you get old. No. What has become widely accepted in scientific circles is the idea of neuroplasticity, which is the brain's ability to change its structure and function in response to experience. In fact, we're finding that self-directed neuroplasticity is the power of thought to rewire the brain. In day-to-day language, that means you can teach old dogs new tricks. Another assumption, aging means people are less creative. False. I like economist David Gelson's comments. He says, every time we see a young person do something extraordinary, we say, that's a genius. And every time we see an old person do something extraordinary, we say, isn't that remarkable? Why is that? You know, the book Senior Wonders, People Who Achieve Their Dreams After 60, that's the title, profiles 23 individuals. And the authors, Pepkin and Taylor, found three common traits. One, passion, having a strong belief in what they're doing. Two, perspective on life, having lived a long life, enabled older people to learn from their failures and successes, establish a clear focus, and develop a unique perspective. And three, persistence, having accomplished their goals by sheer will and determination, they had learned not to give up. Nobody notices how many of these old exceptions, and I say that jokingly, there really are. You know, there's all kinds of lists. I pulled a few off of my research. Alexander Bell registered a patent at 75. Verdi composed Ave Maria at 85. President Reagan took office at 69. Betty White started a new sitcom at 90. Cornelius Vanderbilt began buying railroads at 70. John Glenn went into space at 77. Bill Painter reached the summit of Mount Rainier at 81, and Mary Baker Eddy founded the Christian Science Monitor at 87. This list, we could spend the next 24 hours reading you this list. It goes on and on to the point where you have to begin to accept that these creative breakthroughs, I don't want to even call them breakthroughs, these creative examples are not unique, one-of-a-kind ideas. The last perception I want to talk about for older people is we tend to think older people are risk-averse. They don't want to take a risk. They don't want to change. Well, the Kauffman Foundation, who promotes entrepreneurship, and its research shows that older people start businesses more than any other age group. The share of new business formations by the 55 to 64-year-old age group rose from about 14% in 96 to nearly 25% in 2013, and they started new businesses at a higher rate than those in their 20s and 30s. That is amazing to me. So much for common beliefs. All kinds of other research, but to kind of sum it up for you, what are the facts, the true facts about older workers in the workplace? These are the observations. These are the statistically valid observations. With older workers, you have low turnover, greater loyalty and reliability. You have people committed to quality. You have good attendance and punctuality. You have fewer on-the-job accidents, stronger work ethics, experienced workers, people who are highly motivated and engaged, greater diversity of thoughts than younger workers. They prefer flexible schedules, meaning they're willing to work part-time to match the job demands. Many bring valuable networks of contacts that will help with the business. Those are the facts and some of the benefits. What do employers have to do to accommodate this older workforce? One, you have to look at redesigning your jobs to accommodate workers who are not as strong, who may not be able to work as many continuous hours, who may need special lighting and chairs. This process will not only make them more productive, but reduce the potential for injuries. So the ergonomics of the workplace need to be re-looked at. You know, I read an interesting story of a BMW plant in Germany, and to test these assumptions out about older workers, they took all of the older workers off of the assembly line, and they created a new assembly line of just older workers. And as they suspected, they found that the new assembly line of older workers was less productive than the assembly line of the younger workers. But then as they started to study it, they found that if they redesigned the new assembly line, the ergonomics of the assembly line, to accommodate the older workers, to give them chairs to sit in so they weren't standing as long, to design some of the tools with a larger grip to accommodate the less flexible finger grip that some of the older workers had, to give them more breaks, to institute exercise points. What they found is after they did these things that the older workers, that production line, exceeded the productivity of the younger workers, all because of the attention to the ergonomics. Well, the other thing you have to do if you're going to accommodate older workers is you've got to give them training to handle new technology. Not only do they need to be trained in the new technology, the training itself needs to recognize the difference between younger and older workers. For instance, older workers learn better with shorter training sessions using a mix of methods, such as a mix of hands-on and theory or classroom. And older workers learn better when you go at a slower pace. They need a training environment that allows for fewer distractions, even when they're doing self-directed training. So it is possible to train older workers to be up to date with new technology, but the training needs to not only impart the technology, the training needs to use the technology to adapt to the way in which older people learn. Active health programs. Companies that have a productive older workforce have found that an active health program is key to that. What I mean there is programs that assist with weight loss, with giving up smoking, that teach the workers special exercise programs geared for their older bodies. You know, probably one of the best ideas that I've run into is phased retirement. What are we talking about there? Only 10% of organizations currently allow this. In other words, most 90% of organizations that have a retirement policy say when you hit X age, whether that's 55 or 62 or 65, you're gone. It's your birthday, you're out. It's the first of the year, in the year in which you turn that age, you're out. Only 10% of those with an enforced retirement policy allow phasing. And phased retirement benefits both the worker and the company. The company gets to adjust to not having the experienced hand on the job slowly. It allows for training or redistributing the work. It provides time for the transfer of knowledge that may never have been documented. For the individual, the retiree or the supposed retiree, it allows them to gradually adjust to not living with the same work schedule that they've had for the last 20 years. It allows for the transfer of knowledge to someone else, which contributes to the older worker's sense of worth about what they've been doing for so long. And while they're phasing out of the old and phasing into the new, it allows for a much less dramatic change. Well, I want to go on to what individuals should do, but let's take a quick commercial break. Okay, we're talking about retirement today, and we've just finished kind of going over what the employers need to do to really keep this experienced, trained, dedicated, older workforce on the job, to accommodate them in a variety of ways, and if not, to at least consider a phasing of retirement rather than an abrupt retirement. But what should the individuals do as they approach and enter this new phase of life, the post-game of their career? Well, the obvious is to start preparing early and don't wait until the day you no longer have to go to work to figure out what you're going to do next. This does not mean you have to have it all figured out. No, just like our first job, you make a plan, work the plan, evaluate the plan, and either make adjustments or make a new plan. You know, when we got out of college or when we first entered the workforce, we weren't sure that that company or that that occupation or that career was exactly what we wanted. For some of us, we may have started in what we ended up doing. For most of us, we found that wasn't what I really wanted to do. I didn't fit there. It wasn't what I thought it was. And they changed. And we changed. We went to something else. We tried a different company. We tried another career. We got different kinds of training. It's the same with planning for retirement. Retirement is going to last you for a period of time. It's the back third of your life. So don't think you have to get it right with the first thing you think of doing, the thing that you might spend the first few months at, maybe the first year or two at. You've got time to try out things and experiment. You know, at this stage of your life, also, you're going to continue going through, probably at an accelerated pace, both physical and mental changes. And these changes will impact how you want to and are able to spend your time. You may have a new work career that you want to pursue, but after 5 to 10 years, you may no longer have the energy or the motivation to keep it up, and it's time to think of something else. So, as you approach this phase of on retirement, it is just like the reality of your career prior to that, where you probably didn't stay in the same job for 40 or 50 years. You made some changes. You're going to make some changes in your on retirement. You know, I love, and I say this facetiously, I love the common advice that we hear all the time about finding your passion. If you can, then that's wonderful. But what if you're leaving what's been your passion for many years? So now you need time to determine if that passion can be satisfied in a different way, or do you need to find a new passion? Or is passion too strong a word, and you just need to find an activity that you enjoy that reinforces your self-worth and fits into the lifestyle that you want to create? And we're going to talk more about that in our next broadcast. We're going to get into the details and go through it step by step. In my mind, the issue that creates the greatest challenge, absolutely the number one biggest challenge to people leaving their longtime position, is that of the loss of their network. I'm not talking about their computer network. No, this network I'm talking about is much more complex. It is the combination of social and work, pleasure and pain, stress and relaxation, challenges and acknowledgments. It is the people, the place, and the issues that we deal with on a regular basis in our job and have been dealing with for years. When you leave the workplace, you not only leave behind your fellow employees that you worked with, fought with, and shared life's challenges with, but you leave behind all those other relations you had with customers and suppliers and vendors, the guy in the toll booth on the way to work, the person that got your coffee every morning at Starbucks, everyone that you had contact with on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis at work and on the way to and from work. That's what you're leaving behind. You perhaps leave behind the subject that you shared with most people that you met, your job or your company's product. Here's the elephant in the room. When we talk about retirement, whom are you going to talk to and what are you going to talk about? You're going to walk away from dozens of half-finished stories about your colleagues and their families and never hear how they're going to end. What is your plan for replacing that network? Finding work to keep yourself busy may be the easiest part of retirement. Finding a new network may be the hardest. I have not found anything in the literature about retirement that really talks about this network problem. And yet I think it is at the heart of the issue. When I talk to people that have retired and are not happy with the way it's worked out, they don't use the term network, but it is all about network. It's all about the fact that lack of that network shows up as lonely, shows up as nobody to share things with, nobody to reinforce my ideas with, nobody to even argue with. You know, years ago when I was recruiting for executives to join my forums group, I made a cold call on the phone to an individual who I thought was the president of a car dealership. When he answered, he told me that he had sold the business. So I asked if I had the wrong number then and needed to call the dealership and who should I talk to. He said, no, this was the dealership number. I said, well, then, are you still the president? He said, no, I don't really work here anymore. Now I was totally confused, and I told him that. He said, let me explain. When I sold the business, I retired and planned on staying home. But after a few months, my wife informed me that she had married me for better or for worse, but not for lunch every day, go find something to do. So I went back to the dealership, and they were nice enough to give me a desk, encourage me to continue talking to the customers that I had developed relationships with over the years. I don't get paid. I don't go in every day. I don't have to work long hours, but it does get me out of the house at lunchtime. You know, he had found that he needed that network that he had at the dealership, that network of employees, that network of customers coming in, that what he liked to talk about was cars. What he liked to talk about was people buying cars. It wasn't just about the money he made doing it. That's what he enjoyed. And he was fortunate enough to recognize that and go back and substitute for it. Just this morning, I attended a meeting here in Southern California of city officials and representatives from the building industry. The key issue that they were discussing was how to get those who already live in an area, the first ins, to accept the new housing that was needed to be built to meet current demands. As you can guess, the newer housing, in order to make it affordable, will by definition be denser and different, multi-story rather than predominantly single family, which is what had already been built. It was interesting that this issue also breaks down into one of not just lower density versus higher density, but older versus younger population. It seems that the older residents, perhaps to retain their networks, don't want to move into homes in a different area, even though their housing needs are for smaller homes with special modifications that take into consideration their unique physical demands. Another myth that's proving false, that retired people will sell their homes and move away into smaller homes, making their older homes available to first-time buyers. This trend is so dominant, it even has a name, NORCS, standing for, that's N-O-R-C, standing for Natural Occurring Retirement Communities. Rather than building a retirement community with walls around it and big signs that say, do not enter if you're younger than 55, what we're finding, at least here in Southern California, is that people are staying in their homes long past when we thought they would, past their working, full-time working years, and developing their own retirement community, retaining their network of community, their network of, this is my city, this is my neighborhood, this is the store I shop in, this is where I get gas, this is where I go for coffee. It was interesting to me that this one issue of housing, I think, is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the different needs between the younger and the older population. As the over 65 groups continue to grow exponentially, the differences will create stress in many areas of our society besides that of just housing. We're going to continue on this topic, and next week we're going to get to the post-game of life as it impacts you personally by focusing on just what steps you need to take as an individual to get ready for, or if you're already in retirement, what are the steps you need to take to create your new personal on retirement success story. Well, I'm glad that you were able to be with us today, that you were able to join us. I hope that if you're listening to our podcast, I want to thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests. Speaking of guests, if you're retired, nearing retirement, thinking about retirement, you want to be on the show, hey, I'd love to have some people here to chat with about this whole retirement second career, encore career issue. In addition, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals to interview. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, this is Doug Gefeller. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new insights on what retirement means, tickled your interest about the idea of on retirement, and given you information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve those new goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.